We've got our Community Board Chairperson, Dennis Amor, in the studio. Welcome, Dennis.
Welcome, Aaron.
I'll just tilt that slightly. There we go. So you're all ready for... Does the Community Board Chairperson get... Does it feel like you have a break over summer or...
Yeah, I'm going to have a break over summer.
You're going to have a break, regardless. You're going to go into hiding.
No, not quite. We'll be having a break over summer. Next meeting's not until February. Whilst there'll be a few things going on, I'm sure there'll be a few concerns that residents that ring up about something, but that's okay. I'm used to that from business. But I am disappearing to Australia on the 4th of January, so I'll be away for a week or two.
Okay. Well, there will be other board members around and maybe Lisa as well. So the first thing I want to ask about is just the wharf. There's been a lot of work happening at the wharf. Is some of it ready for summer? Has some of it got to stop over summer? Like, what's the story?
Yeah, well, work's going to stop over summer for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So there'll be no work. I haven't got down there this morning, but they were meant to be clearing all the scaffolding away, the under scaffolding from underneath the wharf and under the dolphin. And access should be back to the dolphin, so people can get back to walking out on the dolphin or fishing off the dolphin, however they use it.
So what was that closed for?
It was closed while the structural works were being done. There were some structural works being done under the dolphin and also on top of the dolphin.
What about the issue of a handrail out there?
The handrail's all been fixed up. The final handrail's not there, but there is a safe handrail there at the present time.
Okay.
And the area around the boat ramp where they had their lay-down area and things like that, the containers were remaining, but the fence should be squeezed in and all the pallets and construction debris there should be removed.
Okay, because we're expecting the wharf to get hit hard, all the boat ramps to get hit hard over summer, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, the fishing's been really good. The number of boats over the last few weeks, boats have been going out every day, so I understand the fishing's very good from my neighbour and that. So, yeah, we'll certainly get hammered this year.
Yeah, and we've already seen one incidence of stupidity on the water this year. Did you see that video?
I did see the video.
It looked like something out of a movie. And they seem to be aiming for the steepest part of the wave, the bit that would give the biggest air, which would it's kind of funny to look at, but it's also frightening, the foolishness, I think, that occurred around that.
It is a bit scary. I guess, things there are tools there now for people to see if it's safe to go boating. You know, we do have the Reagan Sports Fishing Club. We've got their surf cam on. You can have a look at that. You've also got your swell maps and everything like that online. So, there's really no need for guys to go out in marginal weather.
Do you think they've sort of thought, we've driven out all the way out here? We've invested this time so far. We're determined to get out on the water.
Yeah, I don't know where they were from, whether they were local or were from the out of town. But you do get that mentality at times. I've been on the ramp where we're thinking about going fishing, and then the wind's got up, and it's 6 o'clock in the morning. We said, bugger it! It's only going to get rougher and windier over the next hour. We've gone home, and other guys have said, I've driven from Matamata or something, and they've gone fishing. But I think you've just got to take the conditions into account, take your skills as well, and ask the locals. If you're not sure whether I go out or don't go out, ask the locals. Have a talk to the Reagan Sports Fishing Club guys, get some advice.
And I had a couple of weeks ago, I was just looking through, John Lawson and I go through at the end of the year, just as many of the news items throughout the year as we can, just like an overview. And the things that I always miss, because I'm off the air through January, but there's always stories about mishaps on the water. Through January, there's always things going on, and there were some people at one point this year who were fined for doing stupid stuff. They actually didn't; nothing bad happened to them or their boat, but they got fined for not following rules like life jackets and stuff like that. So that's another thing that can happen to you.
Yeah, it is, and if you're in a boat that's under 6 meters, I think the ruling is at the moment, everyone has to have a life jacket on. And then the responsibility still sits with the skipper.
So I don't know if people heard the siren that coming over the microphone, but we're a little bit distracted by it. Now we're fully distracted because a police officer has pulled up outside. They've pulled someone over on the main street. That outside speaker isn't working now, so fortunately they can't hear me commentating about what's happening. But we've got extra police in town, haven't we?
We have indeed.
I didn't recognise the officer who got out of the car, so yeah.
But, make sure you wear your life jackets and that sort of thing. And also consider that if you are going out in marginal condition and you get into strife, someone has actually got to respond to try and bring, get you home safely, be it the Coast Guard, be it the guys at Surf Life Saving who responded to and both those groups responded to the boat that tipped over 3 weeks ago at the at Manu Bay.
Yeah.
So, you know, they are putting their lives at risk to come and rescue you. So, you know, people need to be a little bit considerate.
Yeah, and Daniel Kiriopa seems to keep finding people in the water that shouldn't be there as well, and that's really not his job. We know he's a fantastic surfer and good in the water, but...
Daniel did a brilliant job a couple of months ago now when he dragged that guy out, pulled that guy back to safety and things like that. But, yeah, you know, you've got to ask yourself, should they have been there in the first place?
Yeah, yeah. And there was another story I saw was some people, they'd done everything right. They'd gone out, and when they came back, things got worse and they had trouble on the bar. What happened? Oh, yeah, they got tipped out on the bar or something. I'm trying to remember the story. But because they'd left a plan and people knew they were going and they didn't get back on time, then people went looking for them. And they were commended for doing everything right, and it's probably what saved their lives.
Yeah, well, you know, Coast Guard do run a bar watch. Mm. If you're going out over the bar, you can call Coast Watch on your way out.
Yeah.
And then call them once you're over, and you know they have a period of time and they'll wait for you to respond, and if they don't, they'll call other boaties in the area to say keep an eye out for the boat.
Yeah.
Who
do you call for that, Dennis?
Coast Guard,
okay.
I think Channel 2, if you're working out of Raglan, it's Channel 2 on Marine Radio.
Okay, all right. That's all good. On the issue, we mentioned lifeguards before. I know a few years ago the Surf Lifesaving Club there was felt under-resourced over summer out here. Have we got how long have we got permanent guards for or professional paid guards for this summer?
Well, you've got two lots. You've got the professional prep paid guards who do Monday to Friday and public holidays.
Yeah.
So they've started about a month ago now.
Yeah.
And they'll go right through to March.
Okay.
So they're doing patrols, I think, from 10 to 7 every day. And then the weekends, you've still got your volunteers doing the weekends, and they do 10 to 6
okay.
On a Saturday and 10 to 5 on a Sunday. But if there's a lot of people in the water like last Sunday, the PC will make a call and they'll continue to patrol for an hour.
Okay, yeah. I can see people would be sticking around because then sunset's a lovely time to be at the beach as well.
Yeah, but just ask with them, though, that people do swim between the flags and make their life easier so that they don't have a whole lot of areas to keep an eye on the beach.
Yeah,
we don't want people swimming in the harbour entrance. We seem to have a drowning there too regular. So you know, people can swim between the flags. It does make everyone's life a lot easier.
Yeah, and I think most local people know. But if you're new in town, it's a dangerous beach, and the sand can just suddenly disappear under your feet at surprising times you wouldn't expect. That's what I've been told.
Yeah, and the beach is changing all the time. You know, there's a sandbar just off the beach at the moment that builds up, you know, and catches people out and things like that. So the lifeguards will put the flags where is the safest place to swim, away from any rocks that are submerged under the water and things like that.
Yeah, it's not like other beaches where it's pretty straightforward, this one. Okay, moving on from that sort of thing, actually still staying with summer stuff. At the last community board meeting, a lot of talk just about the plans for Sound Splash, and actually we can tie in the lifeguards there. Understand there's going to be extra lifeguards over the Sound Splash weekend?
Well, typically they always put on some more senior guards during that period of time.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. And talking to the convener of Life Saving, that's what their plans are this year. He's working through a plan. And they're in negotiations with Sound Splash organisers to hopefully get reimbursed for some of their costs in doing that.
Yeah, well, there's an extra 8,000 people living at the beach for a weekend. And that, I mean, it's called Sound Splash, so the kids want to go swimming.
They do, and not all of them are probably in a fit state to go swimming.
Well,
so,
we
have to be careful and we have to be over diligent, I guess. And that's the reason they put on, you know, they have sort of 12 senior lifeguards. I think last year they even brought an extra RWC or jet ski down and things like that. So they've got the facilities and the tools to actually try and make sure everyone's safe.
Yeah, yeah. And another thing that that happened last time Sound Splash was here, didn't happen but was supposed to happen, was that the overflow parking was supposed to be available. So I understand you're trying to make sure that is available this time.
Well, overflow. When you say overflow parking, my understanding is that they'll be using the airstrip again for parking.
So that's for the concert goers.
Yep.
Yeah. But there was talk about overflow parking at the community board meeting. I thought it was to do with people just going to the beach. And the problem was that people ended up parking half on the road and it was a bit of a jam up.
Yeah, no, I guess my concern there was that at Wanneroo Reserve, while the construction works are going on for Sound Splash in a couple of weeks before, we lose the access to the overflow parking in the car and the paddocks up at the top.
Yeah.
So I've actually requested that the paddock, particularly the one where they camp, is actually made available for overflow parking. If we get a weekend like we've probably got this weekend with beautiful fine weather,
yeah.
Come the second week of January, everyone will be heading to the beach still. Because I'll be about to go back to work, so they want another weekend at the beach. So we need to make sure that that's open. And similarly at Papahui, we need this year to make sure that the overflow parking there on the soccer fields is available to people, because you know we're seeing more and more people using Papahui.
Yeah.
So we need to make sure the facility's there for them to park without getting too much congestion.
Be interesting to actually know how many people are here from that Christmas New Year period. I know there's all sorts of estimates, population quadruples, things like that, but we don't have, no one's counting them.
No, I got no idea.
Yeah.
You know,
a hell of a lot is the answer. Because you see tents springing up everywhere as well on people's lawns. Manu Bay Breakwater, have we got any update about what's happening with that, the repairs, or not repairs, but the resolution of issues there?
No, but still my understanding is that the middle of January we are going to get a copy of the report done by the experts, the two consultants that were engaged by Waikato District Council to come up with potential solutions. So I haven't had an update on that or whether that's happening. I did ask Alison Dyers if she could follow that up with Trevor Ringert and give us some feedback. So hopefully that's on track, but we'll give them a call.
Okay, all right, but they'll all be having a summer as well. Freedom Camping was brought up. We understand there's going to be a Freedom Camping ambassador out there this year, this summer.
Yeah, my understanding that's correct. That they've actually appointed someone to go around, talk to the Freedom Campers, encourage them to ensure that they're fully contained, or else encourage them to go and stay in the two camping grounds that we've got.
Any advice for people who feel like approaching Freedom Campers because they're in the wrong place?
Well, I guess...
Because it does happen.
It's a democratic society, so people are free to go and talk to them.
Yeah.
But I also just point out to people that have got, you know, concerns about Freedom Camping, that the pre-engagement is still open on my understanding on Waikato District's website.
So what does that mean, pre-engagement?
So you can go on there and make some comments about where you think areas should be prohibited, what areas shouldn't be. Or where they could freedom camp and things like that. So there is, the bylaw is coming up for review this year.
Yeah.
So, you know, those out there that are concerned about it, they need to make sure they're heard and get a submission in later on when it comes up for submissions.
But pre-engagement can be a good time to do it because the staff haven't actually drawn up the rules yet.
No, it's a good time to do it, you know. And like a lot of people have said to me that the Reserves Act prohibits people freedom camping on reserves and parks. But when I had a look at that and asked some questions about it, the bylaw can actually change that. So, you know, this time around, we need to look at, say, Wainui Reserve, for example, where you've got toilet facilities, shower facilities and things like that, and say so instead of no freedom camping, it's actually probably an ideal place, and you've got a fantastic view. I know some people oppose it being at Manu Bay, but you do have similar facilities there. And you could limit it that they've got to be gone by 8 in the morning or something like that. So, you know, there's a few things, smart things we could do to make it actually easier for Freedom Campers. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, we've got two really great camping grounds in Raglan. So we need to encourage them to use those as well.
Yeah.
Particularly if they're not self-contained.
And well, the parking warden, because we've got a parking warden back in town again, are they also going to be, are they the ones doing the enforcement for Freedom Camping rules?
No, I'd have to confirm that. I don't, but my recollection is that no, they're two different groups.
Okay, but there will be someone doing.
There is a parking warden floating around, and there is someone doing Freedom Camping enforcement. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I think we should just remind people that the legislation says that councils have to name specific areas where you can't freedom camp, and then you are allowed to freedom camp everywhere else. That's basically the rule, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I understand, yeah. So you can, in fact, freedom camp everywhere else.
Yeah.
And also for motorhomes, you know, there is a facility to camp to park at the Raglan Club for self-contained motorhomes.
Do they need to be a member of the Motorhome Association for that?
They possibly do.
Yeah, but that's worth doing.
Yeah, certainly is worth
doing. You get information about all sorts of places you can stop around the country that are free.
Yep.
Yeah, worth it. Okay, is that all the summer stuff? There's so much happening. The New Year. Oh no, because you don't have any update on the fireworks, New Year's Eve fireworks. We just presume it's going ahead at this point because you guys gave a reasonable amount of money and Satnam chipped in as well for the super value. So,
yeah, so I would assume that it'll go ahead. I'm sure Peter Story will make it happen.
Yes, yeah, he seemed fairly determined once he set the course he was going to get there. An issue that has come up a few weeks ago, of course, we had signs up around the harbour again, or certainly a thing about the sewage, treated sewage, being put into the water on the incoming tide. We've talked about the details. I tried to follow up with asking council staff about the issue of smoke testing, because every few years they do some smoke testing, which is where they try to find out if the stormwater at your house is actually connected to the sewage system. And that's what's, you know, all the extra rainwater is what's causing the sewage system to get overloaded. I did not get a definitive answer out of the staff. They either weren't interested in putting the work in, or they certainly didn't know off the top of their heads how successful the smoke testing had been, whether the follow-up, they'd followed up and everyone that they'd asked to fix the problem had fixed the problem. So the answer to the question, where's the water coming from when it rains a lot and it gets in the sewage system, I couldn't get an answer. Yeah.
Okay, in reality, I can't give you an answer either.
No, I didn't tell you I was going to talk about this, so I wasn't expecting you to have an answer. Just kind of some comment, I guess, as the chair of the community board.
I guess the issue of stormwater going into the sewage system has been something that we've discussed before, and I know Chris has raised it as well. And I'm aware of it in Raglan, and I know that there are still, I'm pretty sure there's still houses connected. One in not far from me had an issue just about 3 months ago, and when it was all investigated and things like that, it was found that the stormwater was actually going into the sewage system and things like that, because their stormwater is overflowing everywhere, and when it was all sort of dug up and had a look at, it was all still directed into the sewage. So I'm sure there's, and that's an old house, that's 70, 80 years old.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there's still a lot of houses of that age that have stormwater going into it, stormwater going into the sewage system. And I guess other than doing a house-by-house inspection, I'm not sure how else you identify that.
Yeah, I sort of talked about that. Someone had put a comment on Facebook, the notice board, about it, and I put a comment that it's from our houses. And someone said, look, 15 years ago, we got a letter from the council saying that we'd been smoke tested and we had to comply, and then they followed it up. And we know in 2017 there was smoke testing. So, yeah, I was just trying to find out what the results of all that was, and I wasn't getting an answer.
Yeah, no, I actually wasn't aware that they did smoke testing, and I'm not sure exactly how they'd do that to see where...
Well, you put smoke in the sewage system, and then you go around looking at people's houses, and if there's smoke coming out of the guttering, like where their downpipe is for their stormwater, if there's smoke coming out of there, then you know that roof water goes into the sewage system.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it may not be 100% foolproof, I don't know. You know, you might miss stuff or what have you, but I did see a house in 2017, I remember, around the corner from me, some smoke coming out of their gutter. So... I know it kind of works, but maybe it doesn't work that well. Maybe also every council has this problem, and it's actually impossible to stop rainwater just like gets into the ground, and maybe it seeps into the, or gets pressurized into the sewage system. So that's kind of a question I like an answer to is, are we expecting too much? Maybe.
Well,
it impossible to resolve?
I guess. Well, I doubt if it's impossible to resolve, but I guess going forward it's something we do need to address if we've got significant volumes of stormwater going into the sewage system.
Yeah.
It's a huge cost for us to treat that stormwater, which doesn't even need to be treated. So it is certainly something that we need to look at. And it's also giving us false volumes of, you know, perceived sewage that has to be treated. So we certainly need to know what the quantums are. But I do know that a few years ago they actually made you put traps around your wastewater traps so that the stormwater or water runoff on the land didn't flow straight into it, because some people's traps were lower than the ground level.
Oh, yeah. Over the years they put concrete around it and things like that, and it actually directs the water in.
And
And that you can't figure out, get from smoke testing.
No.
Yeah, okay. What was the... Oh, you were going to have a check out the Lorenzen Bay walkway, which we're told by some council staff needs to be closed and a new one put in. And people have said, well, that's a really steep location to put one. You were going to go check that out?
We did.
And?
Lisa and I actually went for a walk. We walked the proposed new one and we walked the old one.
Yeah.
I guess we both scratched our head and said, why are they closing the existing one?
Yeah.
It does need a bit of work on it, but we're not talking about a significant amount of work.
Yeah.
And the new one, it wouldn't be difficult to open and it wouldn't be that expensive to open the new one. Both of them are steep. I guess you'd have to say they're of similar contour and that sort of thing.
Okay.
But one of the proposed one, I can see the inconvenience for some people because it does go along the front of about five houses. So it goes between their house and their view to the sea.
I imagine that where it came out was above a cliff, so you'd have to walk down the edge of the cliff.
It does.
To get to Lorenzen Bay?
It does come out above the cliff that's on the wharf side of Lorenzen Bay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does come out outside that. But there's plenty of room there between the cliff and the boundary of the houses and things like that.
But the people in the houses might be reluctant to go along with that.
Well, I can understand their concerns. They're having a whole lot of public walking across, you know, basically what they've regarded up until now as their front lawn. But in saying that, you know, why spend that money at the moment when you could probably spend 15 or 20 grand thousand to fix up the existing one, because it still is, the walkway down, the steps down still looks sound. It's just some of the bank on the footpath at the bottom has eroded into the stream that runs past there.
Yeah, yeah, okay. And council staff had said something about flooding down there being an issue. I don't imagine that happens very often.
Oh, well, we all know that bottom area of Lorenzen Bay floods and that footpath does flood.
But so do the houses next to it as well, don't they?
The houses next to it, yeah. So, but, you know, thinking back, I've probably only seen that a couple of times, two or three times in the last 10 years.
Yeah, 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 okay, all right. Hey, folks, we're talking to our community board chairperson, Dennis Amore. And have you got anything else you want to bring up? I think that's most of the stuff on my list that I could think of.
No, I think those were the key things that came out of the last community board meeting, Aaron.
Yeah.
The only thing I'd say just to people over the Christmas period, Raglan's going to be busy. We'll have our usual congestion that we always get and things like that. A few challenges around parking, but just ask everyone to be tolerant and that sort of thing. And if you're local, you know, just consider going early in the morning or going later in the afternoon. If you have to drive into town, just to ease the congestion.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do. We don't enjoy the congestion. It feels just feels wrong. But I know that the local businesses will be thriving on it. So, yeah, it's all good.
I'm sure they will.
Yeah, all right.
But, all the best to everyone for Christmas and New Year, and just stay safe. And thanks, Aaron.
Thanks for coming in, Dennis. All right, folks, we're going to be having a chat with Craig after this, but we've got a little break first up.